Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show. I'm your host, Phil Huff, and today we are pre-recording a very special show for you. In the studio with us, we have Lori Clawson, who is walking across America. Longtime and avid listeners of the Tuesday Morning Show might recall in 2019, in the middle of the summer, she came through Sandpoint, and Julia and I sat down in the studio with her for a live interview, which is still recorded as a podcast up on our archives. If you're truly curious and you want the historical version, you can go to krfy.org and listen to the first interview. But we're here today to talk about an update about how things are going on. Before we get into that, let's just do some general introductions of Lori and who she is and what this is all about. And Lori, say good morning to our listeners and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to do this really special endeavor.
Well, good morning. This special endeavor started 7 years ago and has been very, monumental in my life. But it started because I had walked across Spain and I wanted to walk across America. I thought, well, I loved Spain, but why not walk across my own country and get to know it? So that's what started me. And here I am, 7 years later, still doing it, but I'm getting close to the end.
Yeah, 7 years later. So that was 2017.
Yep.
And where did you begin?
I began in Vancouver, Washington, in front of the hospital where I was born.
And ultimately, you're going to end up?
In Bangor, Maine, in front of the hospital where a good friend of mine, John Cody, was born.
So these landmarks make it a very special trip. And along the way, you've routed through some interesting areas, and you've come through Sandpoint.
Absolutely. Loved it.
Yep. Fairly early on, only
500 miles.
Yeah. Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Trace us the rough route for our listeners so they have a general idea of where you started, where you're going to, and the route you've taken to get there.
Well, okay. It's been 3,000 miles, so let me just review that. Sandpoint was 500 miles, but I started in the Columbia River Gorge. And then came out of that and dipped into Oregon just a little bit, went through Walla Walla, loved it. And then came back up into Washington and headed north, went through Spokane, came through Sandpoint, east through Montana, which took me well over 2 years to get across.
That's
Montana.
A long state.
It is a long state. I think it was like 800 miles the way I did it. I loved every bit of it. From there, clipped the corner of Wyoming, then through South Dakota, went through the Black Hills, the Badlands.
Did you find Rocky Raccoon?
I did not, but I saw a lot of prairie dogs. But so then it was east across South Dakota, through Pierre, South Dakota, and into Minnesota, and that was fun. I had a mutual friend in Minnesota that I really enjoyed seeing, and then into Wisconsin, which I loved. The country roads in Wisconsin are fabulous. And then I got to go across Lake Michigan from Manitowoc to Ludington. And then I got to see a good friend, Pete, in Michigan, who helped me there. And then I went down into Ohio. Oh my goodness, this is getting long. Well, it's 3,000 miles. Through Ohio. Okay, I'm going to put it out there. It was my least favorite state. Okay.
I hope the Roy Hands aren't listening.
Sorry, I just have to be honest. But no, there were some good points in Ohio, but they were few and far between. And then through the little bit of Pennsylvania that goes through by Lake Erie. And then into New York. So I'm in New York now and went through Buffalo on my first segment this year. And then now I'm going east on the Erie Canal Trail, which is heaven.
And then from here, where do you venture off to go up to Maine?
The town of Amsterdam in New York is where I'm going to leave the Erie Canal Trail. And I'm going to go northeast from there and into, I think it's called Pulteney or something. It's right inside New Hampshire. And then I will go through the Vermont mountains and pick up the New Hampshire trail there, and then Maine. So,
and you intend to finish next year?
Next year, almost exactly a year from now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How exciting. And how did you choose this route, or did it choose you somehow?
Oh, no, I chose it. That's the hardest part, is the logistical planning of where I'm going and how I'm going. As you well know, I sometimes think I spend more time on Google Maps studying where I'm going to go or what the possibilities are than I actually do walking. But that's not actually the case. But it feels like it sometimes. I have to research it.
Yeah. And obviously, because it's over the years, you're doing it in segments, and that's an interesting style. We talk a lot. You and I talk a lot about walking styles, and there's a lot of ways you could do it. But you've chosen to do it in segments of about 10 days each over the course of multiple segments, multiple years. Tell us a little bit about how all that works.
Well, it's working a lot better now than it used to, because when I first started out, I think the first year I had no help whatsoever. So I was always parking my car, walking out, and walking back. So I got half the mileage, but I've been fortunate in having a lot of really good friends help me out. So that helps me get forward faster.
Yeah. And longtime listeners and friends will know that I've gone out and helped Lori in the sake of full disclosure. So I'll ask you some questions as if I weren't along. When you do have people to help crew or shuttle you, then you can make just forward miles.
Exactly.
And so that helps you double the mileage and cut the time in half, as it were.
Which is a double-edged sword, right? Because I do enjoy being out there, and I don't mind going out and back, but then I start thinking, well, I'm getting older. Maybe I can't finish this before I die, because I'm really made good time since people started helping me. So, but I'm glad it's worked out the way it has, and I think that, you know, it's good for me to finish next year.
And you've had a lot of crew.
I have. I've had some really, really good crew. Yeah. And I have more lined up, so I'm very, very fortunate.
So forward miles, relentless forward progress.
RFP.
RFP.
Yeah.
It to me fascinates me, and I know a segment of our listeners will really appreciate that. In many ways, there's great physical challenges to walking the 3,600 miles, of course. There's some tremendous logistical challenges here. You've just finished up segment 40, right?
Right.
40 times flying out to an airport from Phoenix, 40 times getting rental cars, way more than 40 hotel rooms. How many hotel Airbnb units have you had?
I haven't actually put a number on it, but I probably will look that up. But when I am making such forward progress with crew, then I at least stay in two places per segment, and sometimes three. So it's a lot. So 40 segments, I think it must clearly been well over 100 different hotel rooms or Airbnbs or whatever.
So there's a lot of time spent between walks in the summer and over the winter planning season, just piecing together the puzzle.
It is a challenge. It is a challenge. And walking through cities is the biggest challenge of all.
Yes. Yeah, walking through the cities, trying to find a reasonable route, but then you never know. There's the unexpected surprises.
Right. And it's hard for me, never having been to that city before, to know what are good neighborhoods, what are bad neighborhoods. And to be honest, it's hard to find a place to find a bathroom when you're walking in the city. And, it's a different challenge. I spend hours and hours poring over the maps.
I know this year and last year you've had more cities than previous.
Yeah.
And hopefully more cities than in the next coming year and a half.
Right.
Year. Season and a half, I should say.
So, So my next big city is Syracuse, New York. And I think with John's brother Ray's help, I will be able to navigate that city. Mm-hmm. And it'll be, a two-day event. But beyond that, I think I'm done with big cities.
Good.
So, yeah.
So, no day is the same as any other. I hate to use the term average day, but a typical day or a couple different types of typical days. Walk us through that, no pun intended.
I generally will get up an hour and a half before dawn and kind of get myself ready, prepare my pack. I like to leave where I'm staying with the first light because I don't like to run over critters on the road and I can't see them in the dark. But then I have a drive to wherever I have to start, and it can be it can be a long way, depending on where I'm at. In Montana, it was a long drive a lot of times, less so now that I'm further east. And I park my car. And if I'm fortunate enough to have crew, then I walk forward. They pick me up. Depending on who it is, they may walk some with me during the day. And then they take me back to my car. And then when I leave that spot, I am scouting out the next day's place. And really what I'm looking for is a parking spot in the right place. So that in itself can be a challenge at times.
And more so in the cities than in the country in some ways.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to leave my rental car for 6 hours in a place that's not, you know, legal or you know, whatever can happen to it. So it's a little bit of a challenge, but everything's a lot easier on the Erie Canal, I have to say. I'm really enjoying that.
So starting as you did in 2017, and here we are 2024, you've encompassed a time during which we've seen some tremendous societal shifts. And I'm thinking here specifically, we all came through in one way or another the pandemic, and that impacted many lives, and that had to impact your walk in ways that maybe the person hearing about this the first time only is beginning to scratch their head and think about. Tell us about how COVID impacted your adventure.
Well, it was interesting because I did not stop walking because of COVID. And right after it started and everybody was afraid to travel and was discouraged from traveling, I was in Montana, walking through Montana at the time and going through some Indian reservations. And they didn't want people coming onto the reservation, but I was on a public highway. And I was stopped a few times because they wanted to know what the heck I was doing there. And I thought they were checking on my welfare, but really they wanted to know why I was there. But they, you know, I had a legal right to be there. But, you know, there's no greater social distancing than what I do.
Yeah.
So once I got to where I was going, I didn't interact with people. And so I don't think I was a public health menace or anything, but you know, I felt guilty about traveling at that time because that was the time when they were saying stay at home. But I don't think I endangered anybody by walking on remote highways through Montana during the pandemic. So
there's an element of risk you were taking too, not just in the walking. I'm thinking flying, which even as it were possible, were still in some ways a risky behavior.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, you just do what you have to do, right? I stayed the course. I kept going, and for better or worse, that's what I do. So I love a long-term goal, and this is definitely fitting that definition.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about the logistical challenges. Tell us more about the physical challenges you face by repetitive motion every day for periods on end, but in between then you have downtime and I know you train, but tell us a little bit about how you stay capable in shape, as it were, for sustaining multiple segments of such an adventure.
Well, I'm a walker in general. So when I'm at home, I'm walking every day. So I do keep the mileage up, to the extent that I can to keep able to do the miles that I do. And of course the number of miles I do every day has decreased as I've gotten older. It's rare that I don't walk. It's if it's a travel day, I don't walk. But other than that, I walk every day.
And you walk how far?
Anywhere between 7 and 12 miles.
In the off days, and then on trail.
On trail, I'm walking now. I'm trying to average 12 miles a day. And that's a good level for me now. And when I first started, I was doing 15, but you know, I was 7 years younger. Yeah. So,
and left pinky toe has been talking to you.
Not lately. Shh, don't wake him up. No, actually I've been feeling that has not been a problem lately. I got some arthritis in my hip. And I've got some bone thing going on in my left foot. I think because of the tilt of the highway and being on the shoulder and walking facing traffic. Yeah. That over the many miles has done some damage that may or may not be permanent. But Advil is my friend.
I know you mentioned roadkill, but when you slow down and go at the pace of a pedestrian, the experience of going on a highway changes. Tell us about what you see that you might not see as you're driving.
Oh, lots. There's so much more that you see, including the roadkill. But just little details, little knick-knacky things that people put in, you know, on the end of their driveway that, you know, you're going by in a car, you don't see them. I truly enjoy that detail. Mm-hmm. And that's why sometimes I think, oh, I kind of miss going out and back every day because I see so much more, but I don't miss it that much.
Yeah. Well, you get the perspective changes going one direction or the other.
Exactly.
You physically see things you might have missed.
Exactly. Including all those coins I pick up on the side of the road.
Yeah. Tell our listeners more about that.
Well, you know, it's funny because in the Columbia River Gorge where this all started, I was picking up coins all over the place. I don't know how these coins get on the shoulder of the road, but I mean, it's like every 50 feet, I pick up a penny. What the? This is really cool. But, you know, it's less so now that I'm back east. And South Dakota wasn't that good for coins either, or Minnesota, now that I think about it. But I think I've picked up around $82 at this point.
Okay. A penny at a time or a nickel at a time. That's impressive.
I've had them all. Even some Canadians slipped in, but, you know, we don't begrudge them that.
Yeah. What do you, your basic get up. You talked about getting your pack ready. What do you carry? What do you take with you? What do you wear and shoes and the whole gear equipment thing?
Well, I've gotten a little smarter as I've gone along, and I try not to carry quite as much. But I carry probably, you know, 2.5 liters of water, maybe a power, you know, an Under Armour drink, and then a couple snacks. And then I always have my rain gear and my, you know, anti-blister stuff. It adds up.
Yeah.
But it's, I feel good about knowing that I'm prepared for anything, but I don't need most of it. Oh, and I have a stool. I have a tripod stool that I...
Very handy.
Very handy. I love, you know, if there's nowhere to sit, I can just whip that out and have a nice break.
Yeah.
So that works well.
And you've gone from boots to shoes.
I have. I've started out in Salomon boots and, they worked for me for a long time, but with my foot problem, I've been much more comfortable in Hoka Stinson All-Trail shoes.
I don't think they're an underwriter yet, but maybe they will be now.
I sure hope so, because they're not cheap.
Yeah. What along the way, you've not gone entirely the whole route, so there may be surprises yet, but you've seen a lot now in over 3,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what surprised you most, perhaps, about what you've encountered in America.
Well, I don't know if it's surprising per se, but it's been wonderful is, you know, those milestones, crossing the Continental Divide in Montana, crossing the Mississippi River was a big one for me. And then the boat trip on the SS Badger across Lake Michigan was fun.
Yeah.
So these are all like, there are moments when they make me think, look, Mom and Dad, here I am.
Yeah. Yeah. So, landmarks and watermarks, but important places to
bridges. I love bridges.
Bridges.
Yeah. Bridges are cool. Yeah. So, yeah.
Lots of people.
And it's interesting to see how people are all the same across the country, except there are slight differences. And I notice a big difference between East and West. Everything east of Lake Michigan is different from the west. And whereas when I would walk through remote areas of Montana and South Dakota, people would see me on the road and stop and say, are you okay? Is that your car back there? Is it broken down? No, I'm just out here walking. They had a hard time believing that, but they stopped and they asked, which I appreciated. I haven't had that since I crossed Lake Michigan.
Mm.
It's interesting. We got mine. There's people everywhere.
Yeah.
Once you get in the east, so it's different. It's a different experience.
It's different. You wonder how much that is that the people are different or the social dynamics different. So maybe it's where there's sparse, the population's sparser, and someone on the road less frequent. There may be more of a sense of maybe they have a problem.
And people are so much more willing to stop and help when they think somebody might be in trouble out west. So
scenery has changed along the way. And
Yeah. No, it's been fabulous. I have to say, what a journey. 3,000 miles so far, you know, the rivers, the lakes, I'm into the natural beauty more than I hate the cities. Okay, let's put it out there. But sometimes you have to do that. But oh my gosh, it's just fascinating. Yeah. It's just fascinating seeing all the different places. And I can't wait to get to Vermont.
That all has to give a sense of progress, moving from the West, which is arid, to the plains with its cultivated fields that are a bit more green, but still wide open. To the tree canopy that you're encountering through the upper Midwest and East. The physical changes have to be significant in your mind.
Yeah. It's all different and fun. And I'm doing it from April generally through October. So I'm seeing some spring and fall, you know, the color changes, the rejuvenation of spring. And I like that. And like I say, the lakes, the rivers, it's just fascinating. And the people along the way, I always run into really nice people. So I'm very fortunate.
Give us a couple anecdotes. Anyone stands out as particularly remarkable that you had an encounter maybe you weren't expecting or caught you off guard?
Well, I'm assuming you want me to tell you a positive encounter rather than a negative.
It can be positive
one.
Or negative. They're negative. They're probably not within our listener bucket anyway.
Well, no. I mean, I just, on the negative side, I did, run into a very kind of, I felt afraid. Person going through Rochester. But, I got through it. For the most part, I can count on one hand how many times I've really felt the heebie-jeebies about somebody maybe being threatening. But the rest of the time, I can walk along and I can, someone who seems genuinely interested says, Are you just out for a walk or are you doing something really long? And this happened to me this last trip. And I said, well, I'm walking across America. And she just got so excited and said, oh, you should talk to our local newspaper because we need some good news. And I thought that was nice. Of course, I moved beyond that. And but it was a lovely sentiment. And she was really fun. And she told me all about the town and she walked with me for a while. So
anyone else who might have, you had an exchange with it left sort of a lasting mark on you.
Oh, you're going to stump me now. I think I talked about this on our first interview 5 years ago, Tent Man. I call him Tent Man. He made the most lasting impression of all.
Tent Man.
Even over 3,000 miles.
Refresh our listeners who might not remember from 5 years ago.
I was driving through Washington to get to my starting point one morning, and I saw a bunch of police cars surrounding this tent and a trailer, no vehicle. And I thought, oh, that doesn't look good for him. So I went on. The next day I saw that same tent and trailer, 5 miles further east. I saw him again, and I wondered, what's going on there. And at that point I had to cross into Oregon, and then I had to go across a bridge to, avoid the interstate to cross the interstate. And that next day I saw him again on the other side. Again, this is a guy who had no vehicle. And he had a trailer that could be pulled behind a vehicle, but he had no vehicle. And I walked right by him on that third day, and he had two really big dogs that were not tied to anything. And I walked by his tent early in the morning. And this is when I was going out and back by myself. So I walked by the first time, and he said to me, "Good morning," from inside the tent. And I said good morning back. And then when I came back by, he didn't say anything. I was on the other side of the road. But I always regretted not stopping to have a conversation with the guy. I didn't feel threatened by him, but his dogs were pretty big. But I wonder what his life story is, mm-hmm. you know? It's, yeah. So,
you've had unexpected, what we might call in the long-distance hiking community, trail magic. People who've helped out along the way that you weren't expecting, that weren't crew necessarily, invited you in or something.
Yeah, when I was in Wisconsin, we finished the day. I was with Lynn, and we finished the day, and we were having a beer. We were celebrating one of the 100-mile markers, and a couple of gals across the bar were having a beer, and they're like, "What is that you're putting up? What's that sign you're taking pictures of?" And we told her what we were doing, and I said, "You know, it's the fall. I'm in Wisconsin. I need a bratwurst. Where can I find a bratwurst?" And they said, "Come over to our house." And I did. And it was lovely. They had all their kids there and their neighbors, and they were all, you know, asking questions. They're lovely. I still send them pictures to yeah. this day. So, yeah, good times, good yeah. people.
It's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for great experiences like that. What have you encountered that you didn't expect you'd encounter? What challenges have there been that you didn't know going in that was going to happen?
Well, I didn't know the logistics would be so difficult, and the cities. I mean, that's the worst of it. You know, or if I come into a road closure, and it's hard to get around, or big stacks of freeways. But other than that, it's all good. Yeah. It's all good.
So sort of a follow-up to that is, what would you do differently if you knew back then what you know now?
Nothing. I wouldn't change a thing. I might go be more willing to go further around the cities like Cleveland, which mm-hmm. you know, I didn't enjoy, and
a wider berth,
which, you know, but now I'm on this track to finish for next yeah. year, so I have yeah. it's changed things a little bit, so and I'm happy to be finishing next year.
Yeah, you get closer in along this line as you get closer and closer to the end. Have you had any real moments of epiphany, of complete enlightenment of some form?
Well, I've certainly learned a lot about myself during this journey. And what I suspected, I have confirmed that, you know, people are just people, right? We all have our ideologies and our opinions, but we're all still just people. And that's comforting. To yeah. meet people all across the country that are good people. There's a lot of that.
Oh, that more of us couldn't have that epiphany.
Yeah.
We haven't talked much about food. Food is always on every hiker's mind. And I know it's been on yours from some of your blogs and from what I've shared with you. But tell us about your food experiences along the way.
Okay, well, let's hit the high points. One of my absolute favorites was Chislik in South Dakota, which is little bits of beef that are fried.
So the discovery of regional cuisine.
Yeah, that's yeah. fun. Oh, and a hamburger with peanut butter and jelly on it. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I did it. Just, it sounded weird, but I did it and I really enjoyed it. I've had it again. Just, and cheese curds. Let's not forget cheese curds. I don't like them fried, but I like them fresh.
Cheese curds. Some interesting things in New York, the salad with French fries.
Oh, with French fries,
on it.
Yeah, yes. yeah. Which you had on the side.
Yes, well,
I had them the way so you're far. Supposed to have them. Yeah. I think it was a Pittsburgh thing. I think it was a
Pittsburgh thing that infiltrated southwestern New York.
Yeah, because that's where we were at the time. So yeah, that was interesting. Not necessarily anything you have to do twice, in my opinion. But no, as I get further east, I've got to say that's where the East trumps the West, because there are a lot more food choices.
Yeah.
Through Montana, it was like fried bar food all the way, all the time. Yeah. And great burgers, but, you know, you get tired of fried food all the time.
Yeah.
It's hard to find a green salad.
I won't ask you worst or best meal, but anything stick out as remarkably good or remarkably, would rather not do that again for a place or a thing?
Well, I don't focus on the negative experiences with food. I just delete them from the memory banks. But the positives, one of my all-time favorites was a place called Walker's in Billings.
Mm.
And I went there. I stayed very close to there, and I went there every night I could. That was one of my favorites. Some really good places in South Dakota, not Sioux Falls, Rapid City. Yeah, Rapid City, some really good places there. I mean, yeah, it's fun to come to a place and sampling all the local fun stuff.
And you never know what you're going to get.
Never know. It's exciting.
For someone who's listening, who's thinking, you know, I could do that. An aspiring walk across America person. What advice would you give?
My advice would be go for it. Seriously, it's taken me 7 years. It will be 8 years in total when I finish, you know, and I do it piecemeal. So I don't have to pay for the whole thing all at once. And I don't have to do it all at once physically. I go home and I work and refill my bank account in between. But it's an incredible journey. And I highly recommend it to anybody, any kind of, you know, you've done it, the through hiking, the, you know, going from one point to another, and you just see so much more.
I think an adventure of any kind, whether it's walking or paddling or biking, whatever direction or place, the longer you're immersed in it, the more it's a process of discovery, and the more unexpected things, the things we don't try to figure out, that we simply go to experience, the more we're going to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a wonderful, wonderful adventure, and I still got another year. So I'm excited about that.
Now, I know you have some big plans for the end. And anything you want to reveal now?
Well, I don't have details yet, but I'm anticipating that a few friends may show up. I would love it if those friends would walk at the very least the last day with me, to the extent possible. And then, yeah, we're going to celebrate. This is a major accomplishment.
Let's make sure it's a wide avenue. It has to close down parts of
well, it's Bangor. It's not that big of a town, but yeah, we'll figure it out. Yeah. We'll figure it out, and I will send out information to that effect, because it will be a fun time. So
the walk's ending next July, but your walking won't end. We know you.
Oh, no. After I finish, I'm going to go home and sit in front of the TV for the next 10 years. Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do, where I'm going to go. I will always walk, but this has not been a cheap hobby.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can't really afford to turn around and walk back, which is my initial desire. But I'm my heart is in the West, and in one of the I will give you one of the possibilities, and that would be, I would go to Millington, Michigan, and I would make my friend Pete drive me and crew me until I got to Lake Michigan, and then I would take the ferry across, and I would do the Western United States again, you know, slightly different route.
On foot.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I just really, really enjoy the wide open spaces, and you don't get that feeling. It's not the same feeling in the East.
Yeah. The air is clearer, and the roads are busy, but not quite as, and
Yep, it's a whole different experience. I'm not saying it's bad in the East. I'm just saying it's different, and I'm a child of the Northwest, so I prefer this.
I think many people listening here will relate to the idea that we're here because we're Westerners at heart, whatever that means, whether it's wide open spaces, less dense population, a different kind of attitude or direction towards life or sensing of time, But yeah, it's the Western rhythms.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I am definitely a child of that. And it's what I prefer. I am thrilled to be going through the eastern part of the country, but can't wait to get back here.
Well, that's probably a great note to close on. But as we wind down the conversation here, is there anything that you'd like to say that we haven't touched on?
Not specifically, because I wasn't prepared for that, but I really want to say thank you to all my crew.
Mm-hmm. It's a great opportunity to be a crew. Speaking as one, I want to thank you for the opportunity to share in the experience, to help be part of it, and that's always very fulfilling too.
Yeah. I'm glad you feel that way. Yeah. I'm glad others feel that way, because they obviously do. Yeah. But I am definitely a very lucky person.
Well, thank you for coming on the show this morning, Lori. And for our listeners who are sitting out there going, well, I'm sure she'll make it, but we want to hear the rest of the story, as it were, at the end. We'll figure out a way to do a taped interview and have you back on the air after next July.
Well, hopefully you will be there with me.
I certainly will. I plan on it. So until then, if you've joined this part way and want to listen to the interview in its entirety, it will be available as a podcast at krfy.org. Go to the website, look for the podcast links, and download this selection. Until next week, this is Phil Huff for The Morning Show, KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho at 88.5 FM and at krfy.org.